Hello, this is Don Bluth, and you're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers.
You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 189, A Troll in Central Park, Brother Troll.
Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties, because it's time to dive into today's episode.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Welcome, welcome, everybody. We're your hosts. I'm Morgan Stradling.
I'm Chelsea Robson.
And I'm Mason Smith.
Woo! And we are excited to have you joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast, where we are reviewing A Troll in Central Park.
A Troll in Central Park.
This is kind of a patron pick. When we did our Kiki's Delivery Service, we didn't really have... When we did our Kiki's Delivery Service episode, we didn't have an episode picked or movie picked ready to go. So we asked our guest and she said this, which I was actually very, very surprised. I was like, given her hints, I'm like, what about Pagemaster? Or this is
no,
or that.
That's just you. You're projecting because you wanted Pagemaster.
Morgan is the fandom for Pagemaster.
And she's like, oh, Troll in Central Park sounds great. I'm like, rock on. So here we are, everybody. This is brought to you by the patrons, and I'm really excited to talk about it because it is considered not the best of Don Bluth's films, and we will definitely...
Widely considered to be his least.
For many reasons, and we will dive into it and talk about it.
One of the year's most enchanting stories is about to bloom. Now, Don Bluth, the director of An American Tale, takes children of all ages on a wondrous and spectacular fantasy adventure that will delight and surprise you. A Troll in Central Park. It all begins when a lovable little troll named Stanley...
I won't have him growing any more of those things!
Flowers?
...is banished to Central Park by an evil queen.
Delicious to be so vicious, I'm the Norga, the queen of me.
There, he accidentally comes face to face with a little girl.
Chill.
And her brother Gus.
Who's there?
I'm Stanley. What's your name? Watch this.
Together, they share a remarkable journey as they experience the incredible magic of Stanley's amazing special powers.
You've gotta have a dream.
Until the evil queen discovered all the fun they were having.
We beat Canorca.
Now, you too can enjoy the wonder and enchantment of a friendship that grows and blossoms in a movie that will make your heart sing. A Troll in Central Park. When you believe in yourself, you can do anything.
only film of Don Bluth that I had never seen.
Same.
Same for me. This was the first time for me.
Which, so, I mean, says something.
Well, obviously, we have a troll in Central Park. He's climbing in your window. He's snatching your people up. So you better hide your kids, hide your wife, and hide your husband because they're trolling everyone out here.
Yeah, the horror version of that film. Yeah.
How about that?
So let's dive right into...
You don't remember that?
Of course I remember that.
Antoine Dodson? Yes. Okay. That was
early 2010s.
Like, he was like Napoleon Dynamite 2.0.
That's great.
He was like such a huge deal.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510, is he declaring an emergency? There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So before we dive into our discussion about the film, I want to give some background information. This is pulled all from Wikipedia today. The film was directed by Don Bluth and Gary Goldman. It was produced by John Pomeroy, Don Bluth, and Gary Goldman, the Bluth trifecta, if you will.
Mm.
It was distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures, and release date was October 7th, 1994. And it made a grand total in the box office. You will not believe this, but you probably will. $71,000.
What?
Oh my gosh, I cannot believe this.
Didn't even break 100 grand. Well,
but what did it? How did it do in the VHS market?
Not too well. It just says
once
it was,
again, none of us have seen this.
It was just all it says is that it was released. Here's the telltale sign. It's the most recent release was in 2002 on DVD. They haven't even bothered to restore it, to update it for Blu-ray. So that kind of goes to show that this may not have been, but in other countries, this was known as Stanley's Magic Garden. So it has a different name in case that, so A Troll in Central Park, Stanley's Magic Garden. I don't know which one appeals to you more, but either way, that doesn't matter. It didn't do that great.
I'm pretty sure he destroyed Central Park because of his actions during the course of this film. So I don't know about that.
It wasn't him. It was the queen.
Ghenorah.
Yeah. Ghenorah. Boy, what a piece of work.
So this film is very interesting because it's very, very simple. You know, we have this troll, and basically his magic power is that he has a magic green thumb. And that does the queen...
That's it. He's a plant bender.
He's a plant bender, yes. And the queen of the world hates flowers, and trolls are supposed to be mean and ugly, and he's the opposite of that. So she doesn't like that and basically banishes him off to this... Like, she has these crazy powers where she can just do all sorts of things. I'm not sure why she...
She's got a magic crystal.
I don't know why she hasn't taken over the world, but she banishes him to this place which is supposed to have no greenery at all. But of course, he lands straight in Central Park instead of New York City proper. And then... You know, there's just a big chunk of the middle where he's just like hanging out in Central Park, doing some magic, doing some Elsa and bringing sentient beings to life with the flowers.
He is literally the plant version of Elsa.
Yeah, he brings all these creatures to life, and then we're introduced.
Let it plant. Let it plant.
No,
yeah,
let
he introduces the Green New Deal to New York City.
Let it grow.
This movie is a trial run of the Green New Deal.
Let it grow. That's what I call this.
Let it grow. Let it grow. Oh, that's so good. Man, Don Bluth needs to get on this. Just shelve Dragon's Lair for just a second. Get on this, man. I will pitch you the whole thing. So, yeah. This film, man. So, Dom DeLuise, and you couldn't tell me who any of the other actors are, and I would recognize them, but... I don't know. If you like the sound of Dom DeLuise talking to a baby for 75 minutes, then watch this film.
Yeah?
I can't even organize my thoughts. Someone bring us back on track.
I can.
Go for it.
So we're introduced to these two children who, classic children of the 80s and 90s, where they have workaholic parents who just don't care, don't pay attention, and they do have this nanny that just is completely oblivious, and they go off, and then they discover the troll. And because the main characters of this film are just so young, so adolescent, there's not much where they can go with this, because it's kind of like in novels. A lot of novels, the way that they determine what your category is, whether you are a children's book or a young adult book or, you know, adult fiction, it's based on the age of the protagonist, which kind of doesn't make sense in some cases, because I can have a book that's an adult book, but it's about a younger character. But that's more or less, from what I've been told from my author friends, is how it works. Hence the reason why Harry Potter is considered a children's book and then a YA later on. Well, obviously, but then it gets more dark and serious.
Right.
But this, because the character more or less is probably around 18 months or to two and five, I'll put, there's just not a lot of growth or a lot
she's
of where to
young.
Go. Yeah, she's a baby.
She's a tiny thing and she's just walking, running around Central Park.
Right.
Yeah.
What a time to be alive.
Hot.
Yeah, classic tale of two kids whose parents can't be bothered by their own children. And so there is a magical creature, thankfully, that teaches them the life lessons that their parents never
did this
will.
Not remind and, you of We're Back also, where it's like the girl who her parents are just too busy.
The parents just could not be bothered. Boy, that poor kid, he just wanted to go hang out with his dad that day.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting.
Oh,
you look
gosh.
At the kids that grew up with this type of music or these type of movies, and look at us now. Here we are.
Yeah. We're doing our own podcast talking about those movies.
Right.
We made it through, man.
Oh, man.
I don't know. Maybe it's because, speaking of darker tone, maybe it's because I lost my dad when I was an adult, and I think back on the opportunities that I missed, you know, to talk or spend time with him. But when the kid comes up to me, he's like, come on, Dad, we're going to go do this. He's like, oh, you can't come with me. Get out of here, kid. You know, it's just like, In the Living Years by Mike and the Mechanics just fades in, and I'm just like, no, Dad. Aww. But anyway, this is just animation. The kids are not allowed to have loving, supportive parents.
Oh,
animation trope number one.
Yeah, animation
if
trope.
If you have two
man.
Parents, they're disengaged parents.
Yeah.
And before this even, I don't know, we just get introduced to this litany of characters. There's dysfunctional relationships all over the place, because Queen Gnorga and the king, there is a king and he does play a vital role, but he's just kind of he does what his wife wants him to do. You know, the queen, she is in charge and she just kicks it off with her villain song.
Oh yeah.
That was weird.
If she sang, do you think she sang it deliberately off key? Because that was painful to listen to.
I mean, probably not. Yeah, no, okay. I really liked the opening music. I thought it was very, like, whimsical.
Oh, yeah. Classic Don Bluth.
Very classic Don Bluth. And then it goes right into, like, all these, you know, random voice actors, which I do want to take a minute to, like, go through. If you're looking on IMDb, it has, like, these miscellaneous characters at the end. You have, where'd he go? Oh, Neil Ross plays generic Pansy.
That's a character name nobody wants to have.
No. And then Frank Zambetti plays himself as the ugly little tree troll.
That's who, like, he is in real life.
Iconic.
That's what
iconic
that's what
character.
It says self - ugly little tree troll. I was like, what the heck?
What does that say about him?
Identifies as an ugly little tree troll.
Okay. Ugly little tree troll and generic pansy are some of my all-time favorite iconic animated characters. I actually cosplayed as generic pansy a couple of years ago, and it was a big hit on Instagram, you know, for a couple of days. But, you know.
Yeah. So right after that, it goes into her to her villain song, which I thought was really weird. I don't know if that's ever...
No, it's sassy.
Why would you bring up your villain before you bring up, like, the main issue I had with this was I did not know what the personality, you know what the motivation is to an extent of the troll Stanley, which we don't find out his name until like later, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's not important.
But it's like, you understand that he likes flowers, okay, but that's it. And...
Well, he wants to be a garden. Yeah, at the very beginning, they do establish...
He has bright colors, he has round features, you know, the shape is there.
No, they make it very clear that he wants to grow things, and she hates flowers. You know, at the very beginning, they're just like, what is that smell? And she hates flowers, and she hates anything like living and growing, and so that's at odds with who he wants to be as a troll, and trolls are supposed to be ugly and not smelling good, and flowers are not a part, greenery and flowers are not a thing that trolls do.
Right.
Yeah. She doesn't know anything about love or kindness or the joy of helping others.
Of course not.
Do you think she hangs out with Maleficent, or do you think Maleficent's just like way too good for her?
I think she hangs out with Ursula.
And Rothbart. Maleficent.
And Rothbart, yes. But specifically Ursula, because right at this point, at the beginning of her song, she like does the whole Ursula lipstick gag. And I was just like,
again,
totally
Disney just
stole that from
stealing ideas.
No, because this was 94.
Oh, never mind, 1994.
And so they definitely stole that from Disney.
Well, who knows?
Can we just talk about the different amount of films that Don Bluth was doing during this period? So okay.
he was overworking himself on a roll.
So Secret of Nim came out in 82, and then 86 was An American Tale. 2 years later, Land Before Time. A year later, All Dogs Go to Heaven. 2 years later, Rockadoodle. And then two films came out in 94, which is Troll in Central Park and Thumbelina. So Troll in Central Park actually came out, like you said, at the latter part of 1994, but it was completed in 1982. But they held on to it, which is crazy to think that you just have like a movie in the can just because. But they wanted to put Thumbelina out first. And then right away, a year later, 95, Pebble and the Penguin, and then Anastasia. So he was...
Wow.
And you think at the production cycle for animated films nowadays, this is just not how it goes anymore. And he was just busting these out. It's like, okay, let's get a script done in a week. Let's get this into production and let's release. It's just mind-boggling to me that all the different
things... Would you call it rushed? I wouldn't call this movie rushed.
So there's actually...
I just don't think anyone liked
it. There's actually a line in the Wikipedia page where it's talking about critical reception. And he did an interview for Toon Talk in July 2001. And, you know, talking about how he has distanced himself from this film.
Right.
He says that...
How do you distance yourself from your own film?
You just talk about your better ones and never
this
one. Yeah.
He says that the development of a story is like the development of a child in a womb. It takes time and must be done right. And building A Troll in Central Park taught us this lesson the hard way. So it doesn't really go into the backstory of what happened here, but that alone makes it seem that it was incredibly rushed and not necessarily like what they wanted or what they were looking to do. They just kind of moved forward with things. And even in the production section, it doesn't really go into details of like how this movie came to be or why they wanted to do this. It just appeared, you know, and it seems like they wanted to make a movie that was fairy tale, that would appeal to children. So they think like, oh, A Troll Under the Bridge, like, you know, and let's maybe do a spin on that. This is just me totally taking a guess, you know, and I don't know. And there you can tell by the different elements in this film that it just doesn't work, that things weren't thought out. The character there's nothing at stake for Stanley because, you know, yeah, he's exiled, but it's not like he's trying to get back home. He comes to Central Park and realizes, hey, I can turn everything super green. It's amazing. And he doesn't really seem to have that yearning or desire to go back home. And he finds Rosie right away and really like globs onto her when she tries to leave. He gets really kind of aggressive. He's like, no, don't leave.
Codependent.
Yeah. Almost like she's his, you know, and so he likes the kids. And then, of course, he does the Elsa thing and creates his own little sentient beings in the pansies and the flowers. And then the kids arrive and they just kind of hang out. And then finally, the villain, you know, she's behind the scenes. And for some reason, she's still upset that Stanley's around. She's like Ursula, where she's able to peer into wherever that person is with like a magical orb, like you say. And she sees that he's like thriving, you know, under his new situation. And she doesn't like that. So she needs to put a stop to it. So then, you know, after he has dawdled around for the majority of the movie, we have to thrust the villain back in at the end to put a stop to him. And it just doesn't go anywhere. There's nothing that I really care about. The little girl is absolutely adorable and so cute. I love Rosie. She's probably the best part of this film for me, but it doesn't, like, why would I want to watch this if I didn't have a two-year-old?
Right. Well, and even at 2 years old, like the whole part where the villain comes back in and like is trying to kidnap all the kids, like that's kind of creepy.
It's a Don Bluth film.
That's true.
To answer your question, why do they introduce this horrible Mordor wasteland with full of trolls? Is because the purpose of every Don Bluth film is to scare the crap out of children.
Yeah, that is a thing. Well, here's my whole take on it. As I was going through, I was just like, okay, it wasn't until much, like halfway through the movie, that I really felt like we got like some substance or some type of a message or some type of something. And if you look on IMDb, it says like the taglines for A Troll in Central Park were the spectacular adventure of a magical troll who teaches two children that when you believe in yourself, you can do anything. Which that whole idea even didn't even come to him until like halfway through. And I feel like if they would have brought that in at the very beginning and had his little trial, not about the flowers, but about some type of ideological clash, then I feel like this would have a lot more of a through line as opposed to just kind of appearing.
I think, yeah, I also think if the boy was introduced a little sooner and instead of him being turned into a troll at the very end to be very quickly resolved and turned back, if he was a troll and then had to, then he had some issue.
Brother Troll. Yes. The whole conflict of the film should be him being turned into a troll and trying to get back. But at the end, he realizes that being a troll is better than being a human.
Brother Troll.
Brother Troll. Get Phil Collins on the line right now. We're doing this.
Oh, man.
Somewhere, yes. Some troll is trolling for you. Two trolls, one family. Trust your troll. Let the trolling decide.
Yeah, exactly, Mason. That's what I was thinking.
Hire me, Disney.
No, hire me, Don.
I've been waiting for so long. Oh, that's right. I'd rather work for that rock star than Disney. Than our evil technocratic overlords.
The kids don't really have any thing going on other than they're away from home and it doesn't seem anyone cares. It's not like they're missing. There's nothing at stake. You know, for a second, Rose...
It's the 80s, yeah. Man. We forgot about the kids.
Yeah, Rosie's... Right?
Or it's the 90s.
He's doing his bow and kids. Rosie, you know, disappears for a second and that's kind of scary, but he finds her very quickly. But then later, there's... You know, nothing's at stake for the kids until the very end when they want to save Stanley. So if we would have had the kids have something like being turned into a troll, but then that would have kind of made this a bit rockadoodle-ish where the kid is turned into a cat and they had just done that, you know, probably right before this, looking at the timeline of production. So that's two in the same vein. But yeah, I'm liking Brother Troll. Really am.
Troll. Oh, that's
but at least it would have added a little more depth to this film where then he, instead of just like, wow, look at this cool troll, all these cool things that he can do, I love it here, oh, it's getting late, we gotta go, like that's basically all that's happening, he's now he hates it and now he doesn't like Stanley, but the sister loves Stanley and there's a lot of conflict and maybe Stanley can't bring him back and who knows, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that happens, like kids fall into bottomless pits, people get turned to stone. Mm-hmm. I wish they could have taught us a hard lesson about life and loss and just kept him as stone, you know, his stone form.
Yeah.
I think so too. So actually, when I was watching the movie, my internet kind of went crazy, like right as they go back to Central Park and they put his stone like in Central Park. And then there were really only a few, like it seemed like 1 or 2 minutes left of the film. And I was like, I don't need to go back and watch the last 2 minutes because like I got what happened. Like that was actually kind of bold of Don Bluth to end it with Stanley remaining a stone. And then I went back and watched the final and nope.
No,
they wrap it all up. Stanley gets what he wants at the end and everything's happy.
Whole thing turns green. Oh my gosh.
Yay.
I'm from Arizona and that's just too much green. Okay. Mm-hmm, it's just nope. It was weird. It was like a very kind of like a post Infinity War kind of world where everything's cleaner and nicer because there's half the amount of people around, but at what cost? So I'm just like, I'm just looking at this. I'm like, I don't like this city. It looks weird.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. And there's this whole,
I love those guys.
What a great gag. Bring them back. They're rebooting the Muppets again?
Oh, you can never
stop.
Get enough.
Let them die. Give Kermit the peace that he's seeking. quit dragging his corpse out of the archives.
Froggy corpse.
But anyway, just make the meep, or the yip, movie. Make it 4 hours long, intermission in between, time to get popcorn, back in your seat, and then the nope. So there's some creepy things. So I like doing a little bit of audio engineering for various media projects throughout my life, and there is a stock audio sound effect of a baby crying, and they used that stock audio for Rosie. And so that's when she's like crying and then, Stanley comes and cheers her up. But then after that, the boy gets his feelings hurt and he starts crying and it's not his voice crying. They just took the stock audio of a baby crying and lowered the pitch a little bit. And it's the most disturbing thing ever because I did a media project where I was trying to do a demon baby and I just lowered the pitch on it and added like a bit crunch filter on it. And it was the same dang thing. It was very disturbing to me.
Oh, wow. So I was going to say, maybe this was a matter of the budget, but I pulled this up from Moviepedia. Wikipedia didn't have this, but it says the budget was $23 million. So it grossed less than 0.33% of its budget. Like, ouch.
Whoa.
Ouch. The fact that he still made a Pebble and the Penguin and Anastasia after this is shocking.
Well, I mean, that's why it went bankrupt a couple of times because of this probably.
Well, I think a Pebble and Penguin did significantly better.
I had Pebble and the Penguin.
Me too.
So it's like,
yeah, that was more of a hit. Let's see. Pebble and the Penguin ended up doing, $28 million and $3.984 million in the box office. So these were two complete duds for him. Yeah, about that. So,
there's this part where the kids are crying
and he's doing the
Cry Me a River and it lifts the spirits of the queen, of the evil queen, and she's got this magic crystal, right, that she views the mm-hmm. world through.
Yeah.
And you know who she should team up with? Jadeite, we need more human energy to resurrect our great ruler. Yes, Queen Beryl, I have just the plan. My devious plan is already in place. Have you ever watched the film A Troll in Central Park? Tell me more, Jadeite. Have you found the whereabouts of Sailor Moon yet?
Sailor Moon.
But anyway,
Sailor Moon rewatch coming soon, guys. Coming soon.
Absolutely. I am whittling away. I should have done Sailor Moon S because there are so many filler episodes in season one. But I'm whittling my way through season one so we can at least do that sometime. But I think that the queen should definitely look into the human energy harvesting that Queen Beryl and and the four kings of heaven are working on. I could see a potential crossover there. I'm just trying to help you out, Dawn.
Oh.
I'm trying to open doors for you.
Okay, here's one thing that bothered me like more than it probably should have. But the boy's haircut What a travesty.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Like,
I was thinking
rat tails.
Oh,
what were his parents thinking?
And, like, I think the rat tails are honestly on par with mullets. Like, don't do it. Mm-hmm. Do not do it.
Did he have a rat tail?
He did.
Oh, see, like I was just paying attention to the flat top.
It was
both
the flat top, and then like a, it wasn't a complete
rat
tail.
He's got the rat tail mullet.
But it's got like, you know, a little punch of hair that comes down that it's like, that's a rat tail. No, this is no bueno.
Yeah, so just for future people making animated films, and you have pretty generic lead characters, like these kids were just pretty generic, you know? Blonde, cute girl, little brunette, little boy. Just keep hairstyles of the times out of it.
Yes.
Just go to the classic comb over, you know, part it on the side, comb it
over
for
the boy. They were trying
to
stay ahead of the curve. They thought that this was the future for boys' haircuts, and that they would relate to it for eons
yes,
afterwards.
It's true. It's like skinny jeans. They're like still around. They're still a thing.
I mean, yeah.
Some of us have just gained more weight and are too lazy to buy more jeans. Stretchy jeans, man. Hey. That is a trend that I never want to go away. They are a lifesaver for us big thigh people.
It's the COVID-19. Everyone gained 19 during
this
year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, man.
So what was weird is like the fact that Stanley had the green thumb, and then when the little boy gets turned into a troll, which was actually a pig, it was weird. He gets the like a stoner's thumb. What is that? And then I realized, okay, she has that. Like where he can, but then she also now has power over him.
So
that was weird.
Another thing that like, okay, when you're explaining this film to someone, it's like, okay, there's a troll. Yeah. There's a troll who has a magical green thumb. And at the very end of the film, there's this climactic battle that's an epic thumb war. You gotta watch it.
That's right.
It's like, what? No joke. There is a thumb war scene where the queen and her magical thumb and Stanley and his magical thumb, and they duel it out. And I'm like, I've never seen this before, and I never will see it before. Maybe in a future Avengers movie, but wow, that was something. Really
that,
was.
That was the other tagline for this movie was a classic tale of thumb versus evil.
No.
Oh, yes.
Thumb versus
evil.
Oh
man, that's rough.
That's all we could do.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to just meet with Dawn and just strictly do an interview all about this film. Be like, let's spill the beans. Give us the tea.
He would open up to us. We're buddies.
I know. Hey, it's in the past. It's been, you know,
it's
25
been
years.
Enough.
Come on. So, definitely. Well, do you guys have any more thoughts on the movie?
Not really. I don't. I mean, that was my main thing. Is like, if they would have had this be, because the whole idea was, you know, you believe in yourself and you can do anything. So if you would have brought that in earlier, and we would have been able to understand, like before the villain song, because that's generally the makeup of these, you know, the formula, I guess you could say, of these films, is that it starts off, you get to know the protagonist, and then you get to know the antagonist and how they clash together. And it's just, it was weird that we got to know the antagonist first, and we didn't really get to know any of this, you know, the core message of the film until halfway through the film. So it didn't really feel like the message of the film. It just felt like something he believed, but didn't really believe, because he doubted himself, because he felt like, oh, but don't you, in our world, evil always, the dark always overcomes the light. And it's like, huh? What? So I just felt like that was probably the main storyline issue. If they would have like brought that up, established some type of ideological clash at the beginning, and then him come around and think, oh, I thought that, but now I don't, because I'm still afraid of her because she banished me. Oh, but now I'm going to overcome my fear and hit her where it hurts. I don't know. Basically just overcome this fear and end it. I think it would have felt more complete, but this, it just felt like it waffled. Like it just went weird places and you didn't know how to follow it. Am I right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of all over the place. Like it has like a then this happened, but
yeah.
it's so inventive, like to the filmmakers' credit, like there's a lot of stuff in it in this that's like breaking new ground. Like nobody's seen the green thumb gag, you know, since Poison Ivy and Batman Forever. Right. But anyway, you know, and then going into troll culture a little bit. And I think it's just kind of, I don't know, what else got released that year in 1994?
Lion King.
Four animated films.
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Do I look like an animation expert to you? Pagemaster was actually 1994.
Umbelina, you know that his
Yeah,
Swamp
so they
Princess.
Had to compete. They had to compete with The Return of Jafar, which is the greatest animated film of all time.
Right.
Still
and
need to
also
do that
the
one.
Sailor Moon S, the movie. Come on. But anyway, yeah. Probably a combination. I also, I think I read some sort of rumor that it was because it was poorly marketed and the studio, like the production studio didn't have any like faith in it or whatever.
I mean, I wonder why.
Yeah, I mean,
you know.
Yep. So, with that, what would you guys rate it?
I mean, 1.5 stars.
Oh.
I mean, the thing is,
bum, 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 bum.
I know.
Thought this was a pick for your birthday. I didn't know this was a patron pick. So I was like, this whole time I was watching it, I was like, man, what does Chelsea see in this?
Chelsea's nope. birthday pick is coming next episode.
Oh,
good times.
No, this is I love all of the visuals for this. I thought even at some of the different song parts, I felt like they were. I really like the opening, the very opening song, the visuals, like the color palettes. But otherwise, I just felt like it was way forgettable.
Which is why I'd completely forgotten about it and never saw it. So, yeah, I'm probably likewise going to give this 1.5 stars. There were a few things that I liked. Namely, I really liked Rosie. And I liked...
She really did kind of look
really
like
nailed-
Pippa.
Really nailed the tiny tot.
The little cute toddler with pigtails.
Animation.
Adorable.
And behavior.
Yeah. But other than that, like Stanley, I didn't really care for. And the villain wasn't anything special, super generic. And it didn't go anywhere.
She was the Steppenwolf of animated villains.
And, you know, there was no stakes. Things were kind of just tacked on. And you can just see why this did so poorly at the box office and no one saw it. Hardly anyone remembers it. And probably the only people who do remember it are people who had it on VHS and have just a lot of nostalgia for it because the only movie they had growing up, you know, really harsh review from me.
Yeah.
But love myself some Don Bluth and I'm glad that he was able to continue to do movies after this for a time being. But this one just confuses me and I really would like to know more of the behind the scenes with this, like what exactly happened here. This feels like a film that nowadays just would have been shelved versus plowing through.
He
mentions about the story. The story, what we learned is that you can't rush a baby, right? Like a baby takes 9 months. And it seems like they just, for some reason or another, which he doesn't go into detail, it was super rushed. But then once it was completed, they held on to it for 2 years. So I don't know. One day we'll have another interview with Dawn and we'll be sure to find out, but that's my review.
That's great. I'll do 2.5 stars.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. It's fine.
Giving it a lot.
It engaged me more than bed knobs and freaking broomsticks.
Aw.
Sorry. I don't know. There's some cool stuff with the art. Like, you know, I will always enjoy a good matte painting. I will always enjoy some good hand-drawn animation, you know, some fun stuff. And you're right. Like, Rosie she's a pretty compelling animated character in that, like, the technical, like, the craft behind animating, like, a tiny little tot, you know, is great. The kid, though, the boy, though.
Yeah, no.
little snot-nosed kid. But anyway, not really a compelling villain. The stakes did not get me invested emotionally in the story. But I liked it better than Bed, Knobs, and Broomstick, so 2.5
wow,
stars.
Wow, nice, nice.
There you go. Okay.
This just in, I'm going to be on Cartoon Brew. Infamous animation podcast host Mason Smith gives you know, resoundingly positive review of Troll in Central Park.
No, 2.5 is more of a neutral view.
You know, reviews these days, if it's like, if anything's rated below like a 6.0 or like below like a 7.0, like it's horrible, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the scale is very skewed and it's not very balanced.
Well, let us know your guys' thoughts by going to rotoscopers.com/189. Are you a thumbs up or are you a green thumbs up or a green thumbs down for a troll in Central Park?
Who was the guy that emailed us and he was like enraged because y'all gave a 5-star rating to a film that he didn't agree with and he was like, you're giving, no, it was a Goofy movie. You gave a Goofy movie 5 stars. You put it on par with Gone with the Wind, with Citizen Kane. He was just couldn't understand, like, man. We're out here taking everything seriously.
We're like, whose line is it anywhere? The points and the ratings don't matter.
Points don't matter, yeah.
I mean,
anyway, we hope that you enjoyed this episode, even though we're kind of just like, yeah, let's just get it over with.
It's cool. So
I'm glad I saw it because I really had all my life had felt like I've seen every Don
Bluth.
All my
life, all you wanted to do was watch a troll in Central Park.
Well, I wanted to be able to. I'm a completist, okay? I like being able to complete things, and this was the only one I had never seen. So if only for that, now I can say I have now seen every single one of Don Bluth's films.
Don Bluth,
hey, congratulations.
Yay. Complete.
So do you like it when shows and series, they get canceled and they don't end?
Oh, heck no.
No.
Who likes that?
I hate that.
I was so invested in the story, and it's done. Great.
Like, I don't like long TV series. I like short ones, like 10 episodes, and then we're done.
Whoa, okay. A miniseries sort of guy.
Okay. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, before we wrap this up, we do have a voicemail. So let's take it to the voicemails.
Hey, Rose Scopers. This is Kurt. And I just want to say, hallelujah, it's raining, Mason. Welcome back. But you can say the truth of why you were gone, Mason. It's not the baby. It's not having to watch Little Mermaid 2 and Trolls World Tour. Glad you're doing Toy Story 4. I know there will be an amazing tangent about how people can create life by sticking human characteristics on objects like Forky. For all you guys, I want to remind you of way back when, I think it was a Jungle Book episode or close to it, I sent in a voicemail suggesting the Muppets as an animated film you guys could do, and everyone was like, yeah, yeah, that's a good idea. So let's see if you're worth your barbecue sauce. If you do a Muppets movie or any Muppet movie episode, I will become a patron. Just think about that for a second. But actually, I'm just going to become a patron anyways, so please just do a Muppets movie episode. I really wish I could hang out with all you guys. You all seem like my kind of crowd. Hope you're all doing great. Bye.
The Muppet Movement.
So we did mention the Muppets here in this episode, and I'm not a big Muppets girl. I think maybe I've seen the original Muppets movie and the newer one that came out a few years ago, but I'm not like a hardcore Muppets fan. So I wouldn't even be one to go to, like, you guys, Chelsea, Mason, if we were to do a Muppets movie, which one would we do? I've heard that the Treasure
Muppets
Island
from
one
Space
is good. Oh, Muppets from Space. Okay.
Muppets from Space is my go-to Muppets movie.
Okay.
And
I haven't seen that.
But Muppet Treasure Island is also good.
So Mason, you pick it. Let's add it to the list.
Oh, well, okay. I haven't done a pick in a while, I guess, so I'm going to pull my picking privilege now.
Well,
and
if you don't want to do a Muppets movie, you want to do something else, go be our guest.
Okay, right. If we were to do a Muppets movie, I would definitely do Muppets in Space, or Muppets from Space. I forget what the title is. That was like the one that I remember the most, and it's not too entirely boring to me. And Muppet Treasure Island is also really good, but Muppets from Space or slash in Space, I don't know. Is I just like it better or I remember it better, so we can do that. I'd have to look through our backlog and see what we've done and what we haven't done. But yeah, I'd like to do a Mason pick sometime.
Okay.
Maybe I will pull rank and do the Sailor and declare a Sailor Moon episode.
I mean, I've been kind of teasing it, but at the same time, I haven't started my Sailor Moon rewatch. As soon as you say
Hulu,
let's do it, I'll do it. So if you want to do it for October, Chelsea and I will find a way and we will watch Sailor Moon. So
yeah, we'll do Sailor Moon S because I think it takes out a lot of the filler episodes.
Okay.
So we'll talk about it.
All right.
Thanks, Kurt. God bless Kurt.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast. Be sure to leave us a review. We appreciate all of the reviews. Our goal is to get to 500 reviews. So if you have not left a review of the show, we'd love it if you did so. And today we have our favorite segment of the show, which is Mason Reads Reviews. And today,
oh boy, what
is
it this
time? It's actually a review from Kurt in Hank Hill's voice. Take it away.
Okay. Man, I haven't done Hank Hill in so long. You're really stretching my vocal cords. Okay, he says, a really good time with some really fun people. Please read this message in Hank Hill's voice, Mason. Propane, dang it, Bobby. I've been with these folks since the beginning, and they have always been around to lighten my spirits and keep me in a positive state of mind, like propane. I wish I could know them personally so that we could talk about animation and have a good time doing it. America. This is great. Oh, he wrote it in character. America isn't just made in the three colors of the flag, Bobby, but also in the goodwill of Morgan, Chelsea, and Mason, as they represent the curious, fun-loving animation lovers in all of us. I yell with joy at the thought of this podcast existing. Bull! Please yell like Hank Hill does in King of the Hill. That would be great, Mason. Love, Kurt.
Yay, Kurt.
That's the best I can do. During these unprecedented times of the quarantine, my wife has heard all of my jokes and all my impersonations like several times by now, and so I dare not try to pull them out again. So it's if that sounded a little rusty, that's because I am a little rusty. So but anyway, enjoy. That was a great one, Kurt. That was a good idea.
All right, so you can send us a review by going to iTunes and leaving a review. We really appreciate it. And all 5-star reviews we will read on the show. And if you want a specific voice done, make sure to let us know in the review as well. And Mason will do that on a future episode. So our next episode, it is going to be Halloween time. And we are going to be doing The Addams Family. And this is the new one that was released in 2019. We're going to have a special patron guest host, Annie O'Grady. So we're really excited for that one. So make sure to check that one out. And that's all we have for today. Until next time.
We are the Rotoscopers.
We then are introduced to these two characters, which are the children. And their names are
Bumbo and
Gussie and something.
Gus and Rosie.
Queen Granola or whatever her name is. There is a king of the troll kingdom.
Lord.
Yeah. And he... Is there a...
What's that
Is
noise?
There a dog? Or is someone That's, laughing really weird?
My dog. She's dreaming.
Oh.
Montana.
Oh. You named your... Never mind. I'll just,
no,
I'll just
I did
let
not
that
name her. She came that way. I named my dog Cosmic Creepers because that's the name she came with. So this is if you can't.
She's still
hear,
making
but,
that noise.
Yeah, hold on, Montana. Hey. Yeah, she's totally asleep. Oh my gosh.
I would give.
Oh. I just threw a... Oh my gosh, I just threw a comb at her and she didn't wake up. Hold on.
Boy, she must be in deep sleep.
REM cycle over here.
She's in a trance.
Hey.
Oh, get her out of it. Oh, good puppy. She's probably dreaming about foxes or whatever varmints y'all have in Arizona.
Rabbits.
Rabbits. The rabbits are out in force
right.
here in Shadowcrest.
Oh. All right, I'm back.
Okay. You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.